Our very unusual November has been followed by a rather strange December. This hour, how above average temperatures along with a little bit of flooding might affect the plants in our landscape. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day. Horticulturist Richard Geron of Iowa State University Extension and Aaron Stile, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens, will be here. We'll talk about how this year's weather may impact our plants, and we'd also love to hear about your favorite gardening gifts. Also, Aaron and Richard will answer your questions about the plants in your life. 866-780-9100 or email us. Join the conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. And this hour, in addition to your questions about the plants in your life, we also want to hear your suggestions. What do you think are the best gifts for gardeners? What's on your wish list this year? What's the best gardening gift you've ever received? What's that tool that you can't live without? Give us a call, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to Talk of Iowa at iowapublicradio.org. And of course, call with your questions as well. First, though, we're going to talk about the weather. It feels like winter today, but it has been a very strange winter so far. And Aaron Stile, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens, is here today. Hello, Aaron.
Hi.
Along with horticulturist Richard Geron of Iowa State University Extension. Hello, Richard.
Good morning.
And this has been an incredibly odd couple of months with a lot of warm temperatures, a lot of moisture, a little bit of flooding around the state.
It's just Iowa.
Right. But does this have implications for survival rates of different plants? Any worries?
Well, you know, the short answer is it depends. Really, it could. There's some really positive things that have happened because of this warm weather. If you started a lawn in the fall from seed, this has been a great season for that lawn. It had a very long and pleasant autumn for it to establish and set roots. And in fact, Richard and I were just commenting that we've seen a lot of green still out there because of the temperatures the way that they've been. So if you were fortunate enough to start a lawn this fall, it's been a great year. I mean, we couldn't have predicted that, but it certainly has been really positive.
All right. Does that have any implications for maybe weeds taking hold?
Or not. Okay. A nice, a well-established lawn is going to fight off a lot of weeds. And so this weather has promoted a lot of strong root growth in lawns, and that's going to compete very well with the weeds. And so it's going to be a positive in that sense.
Oh, that's good news.
Yeah.
Now, of course, there are a lot of seeds that when they go through the winter, they have to go through this cold period. Are there any concerns about not having enough cold for some things?
You know, we're still pretty early in the season, in the winter season, that is. So there's still plenty of time to get some of that chilling requirement that's needed by some plants to kind of go on to the next stage of their development. And so I anticipate that we're going to get there eventually. The thing that I think has been worrying a lot of folks is we're starting to see some plants with buds that are starting to swell a little bit. And that's a little worrisome. In the long term, that's not going to be a big issue. We may lose a few flowers or see a little bit of tip dieback on those plants that have come out earlier than they should have. But a lot of those plants haven't received their chilling requirement yet. So we're not seeing it as much as if this were, say, February, and we were seeing this kind of warm up. So that's a positive thing. The other thing that's been worrying a lot of people, and I've seen it too, is especially bulbs that are starting to have foliage emerge. I've seen daffodils up in Iowa, foliage up, and then other really early spring bulbs like snowdrop or winter aconite. These plants are well adapted for these kinds of temperature fluctuations. So their leaves are up, but their buds, their flower buds, are likely not. They're still deep within the ground inside the bulb. And so we're probably not going to see a lot of damage to these plants as is. You may see a little bit of foliage burn, and that stuff may stick around through the season. But certainly no need to be alarmed about seeing some of that foliage, especially on some of these plants that tend to do it anyway. I mean, it's not unusual to see daffodil foliage come up early, for example.
But if a daffodil sends up foliage early, does that impact the spring then?
It may. You know, most of the time they haven't, this time of year, they're not going to have sent up that flower bud. That flower bud's not even close to coming up yet. And so you may have some ratty-looking foliage, but unless something really crazy happens, that flower's not coming up yet. And so we'll still likely get, it'll be a little stressful on the plant, but we'll still likely get flowers and all of those other things. And, you know, the other thing to remember is there's not much we can do about it anyway. So, you know, we can...
We can worry, Aaron.
We can worry about it, I suppose. But, you know, there's not much we can do to change the weather or to stop these things from doing the things that they want to do apart from building a greenhouse over it. So, and even that wouldn't be very beneficial. So the idea that, you know, that we're really worried about it, you just enjoy it and know that plants that are adapted to our climates
are smart,
and they know how to deal with this kind of weather. This isn't the first time they've done it.
Now, okay, we've also seen some odd buds on trees, that kind mm-hmm. of thing. And so let's say if you're seeing your lilacs responding as if it's spring, that will affect the spring blooming.
Yeah,
right?
It will. And if you are seeing buds swell, again, there's not much you can do about it. But it could sacrifice flowers for this season. Now, it's not going to sacrifice the overall long-term health of the plant. We may see fewer flowers. We may see a little tip die back. But when spring comes, we can prune back those dead tips, and we can just chalk it up to another tough winter for the flower and hope for something better the following year.
Do you think that this could mean that we have a less vibrant spring ahead of us?
I think it's too early to say that. There is some concern. I've heard a lot of people, especially when it comes to fruit trees with flower buds swelling and opening, and that could have some impact on fruit set, especially on the ones that don't require such long chilling requirements. I think of like cherries and some of these other things that tend to come out early and get zapped by cold. And as long as those flower buds don't continue to develop and, you know, we keep having relatively cool days, and as long as the days don't drastically swing from like 50 degrees one day to, you know, maybe what's more typical for this time of year, the low 20s or upper teens, we won't see a lot of damage. As long as those plants have time to adjust and get acclimated to the new temperatures, they'll likely do okay. And I think the big thing here is we're still early in the season. There's a lot of time left in winter still.
And a lot of crazy things that could yet happen.
Yeah.
How about the moisture? We've had a lot of moisture, too
yeah.
much moisture in some areas. I know that can be really good news for, you know, things that were just planted
yeah.
this year as far as having enough moisture going into the winter season. Are you worried about anything there?
You know, there are a lot of plants that don't like to be wet over the winter. And the most of them will pull through just fine. And then there are some that really abhor it. You know, I'm thinking of lavender as a good example. These are plants that will not tolerate wet temperatures or wet conditions when the temperatures are cold. And so, you know, we may lose plants that lavender is kind of a finicky plant anyway, but there are others too. I'm thinking of things like Artemisia or my coral bells, I think, might be suffering if they're in a low spot. Astilbe doesn't like winter wet. So some of these plants may really struggle because there's standing water in places after, especially at least here in central Iowa, where we saw so much rain here about a week ago. And that's going to be hard on some plants. Absolutely.
Well, and as of this morning in a lot of places, it wasn't standing water, but ice.
Yeah, little rinks.
Right. Is that concerning, thinking, okay, maybe if we're finally getting cold, if it stays cold and you have ice covering your lawn or an area of your garden or around a tree trunk, that kind
right.
of thing, is that a problem?
It may be. I think it depends on a lot of different things. If the tree or shrub was already under a lot of stress and this adds to it, yeah, this could be the thing that pushes it over the edge. Most plants, this alone is not going to be enough to really cause long-term damage. And your lawn is likely to be okay, too. Grasses are amazingly resilient. That's why they make such good lawns. So for the most part, things will likely be okay. They're going to be put under some stress because of the wet conditions. But again, there's not much we can do about it. I mean, I There's nothing I can send out there to dry it up with. There's, you know, it's kind of one of those conditions where we can hope for the best and we can watch it so that when we can do something about it, we can take those actions. But right now, you know, if there's standing water, there's not much we can do about it.
So given that it's been such a strange November and December, and it is still early in winter, and we can have a couple solid months of real winter ahead of us, we could have other things ahead of us as well. What would concern you at this point? What are you hoping will not happen?
I think if I do see things like my magnolias starting to really bud out, that would concern me a little bit, because that will almost assuredly mean that we lose those flowers for this season. But, you know, I also think that some of these plants, flower buds are big to begin with. And we may be looking at these things thinking that they're swelling and getting bigger, when in actuality, they're just the same size they always have. And we're kind of projecting our worry onto them. So you got to be mindful of that stuff as well. The thing I think I'm the most worried about are some of those perennials and other plants that don't like winter wet, because that seems to be, especially with how wet it has been, the thing that is most likely to cause the most damage to certain plants that don't love those conditions. So if I had lavender in my yard, which I don't because it's too much work here in Iowa, but if I had lavender in my yard, I would be a little worried that it might not make it. But, you know, most winters, if I had lavender in my yard, I'd probably be worried it wouldn't make it.
So things don't change.
Right. Yeah. Well, and Richard, I sense that you've developed a real zen-like approach to the weather in Iowa.
Okay.
I mean, you are always great at saying, well, these things happen.
Yes, it's Iowa. I think the best thing would be basically normal weather for the next 2 months or so. That would be great, as far as not extreme cold, not extreme warmth, not extreme snow, but just fairly normal. And I think most plants will be just fine. I do worry somewhat about the fruit trees. Fruit trees do not like wet, poorly drained soils. And if the weather remains wet this coming spring, then I'm concerned, because they can probably deal with it during the winter, but if it stays wet this spring, they may have some problems. So.
All right. So we'll watch El Nino and we'll see what happens. All right. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. It's Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa. With me today, Aaron Stile, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens, and horticulturist Richard Turan of Iowa State University Extension. Of course, you are welcome to join the show with your questions about the plants in your life. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. We also want to hear your suggestions for great gifts for gardeners, your favorite gifts for gardening that you've ever received, that tool you can't live without. We want to hear all about it. 866-780-9100. Also, we have another opportunity for you to be part of Talk of Iowa in the coming days. We do a program every year about acts of kindness. It's an opportunity for you to say thank you to someone in your life that's done something really special for you. You can tell us your story at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. With me, horticulturist Richard Turan of Iowa State University Extension, Aaron Stile, Assistant Director at Ryman Gardens in Ames. And we would love to hear from you. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. We want to hear your questions about the plants in your life. We also want to hear your suggestions. In this season of gift giving, what are your favorite gifts for gardeners? Give us some good ideas. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. And we're going to start with an email question from Susan. She says, I have mounded dirt at the base of my two rose bushes and then put some wood chips on top of the dirt. My question is, do I need to wrap the top tall branches of the bushes?
Not really. Most likely, you may lose that, but that's okay. So if it's a hybrid tea or a floribunda, you may lose the outer portion, but that's okay because they bloom on new wood, so they should be fine.
All right. And should she think about trimming anything away?
I would not. No.
No, not until spring.
We agree.
All right. I just wanted to give you an opportunity to say it. Do you want to talk about how much you hate rose cones, too? I always try to give you an opportunity for that, too.
Well, they're very convenient, but they just don't do a very good job. So
I don't even think they're that convenient.
Well, some people think they are.
All right. Let's get to the phones. Bob is on the line in Ames. Hi, Bob. Oh, we seem to have lost Bob. Bob, give us a call back. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And I know you both know this is coming. I have some great gift for gardener suggestions from both Donald Lewis and from Linda Nave. But Richard, what's on your wish list this year?
Well, I have to mention the 2016 garden calendar, extension garden calendar, since I put that out, so I helped put it out. So it's still available through your county extension office or the online store. So that would be a possibility. And it's fairly inexpensive, and it's gorgeous.
Beautiful, and very mm-hmm. useful.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I like high-quality garden tools. Not what you buy at the big box store, maybe, but really high-quality garden tools like pruning shears, hand shears, loppers, that type of thing, pruning saw, that type of thing, which you can use a long time if you buy high-quality materials. So I like those. Things that are more, let's say, practical.
Well, you know what else would be great to go along with that is high-quality tools and then the promise that you'll go and take the other ones away.
I know. I get these really nice hand trowels, and then I keep the crummy one that I have that bends at the handle every time. I don't know why I hold on to it, but there it is. I guess it's my backup, but it's not even a good backup.
I think someone telling me that they would organize my tools would be just about the nicest thing I could expect this holiday season.
That would be hard to do in my case. They're kind of all over the place.
So high quality tools. How about you, Aaron?
You know, that's on my list too. The high quality tools, because it's normally one of those things that you wouldn't buy for yourself. But if somebody else gets it as a gift, then they're the one who invests in that for you. Then it's a nice, especially if they're high quality, then you have them for years and you think of that person for years afterwards. The other thing that's on my list is a big load of mulch, which I can't get this time of year, but the promise that one will be delivered to my driveway in, you know, mid to late April is a great gift for me.
And with the thinking about good tools. Let's say you're not a gardener, but you're buying for a gardener. Is there a specific tool that, you know, you talked about the hand trowel, but is there a specific tool that you find yourself using so much that may not be obvious?
Maybe this is obvious, but for me, it's a hand pruners. A nice quality sharp hand pruners that you can sharpen the blade on later. You can remove the blade and replace it or sharpen it later. It has little wire cutters at the base, like all of the stuff that these, you know, nice heavy handle, but still a lightweight pruners with a holder or a scabbard or a holster or whatever you want to call them. That is probably one of the most used tools in my garden.
Or a one-piece trowel. Basically, doesn't it have a handle? It's one piece. It's solid. It's not going to bend. It's not going to break. One of those will last indefinitely. And I use mine all the time.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, let's get to the phones. Ray is on the line in Mason City. Hi, Ray.
Hi. I have an amaryllis that I had restarted this year, and it did real good. But when it tells you that the after the stems die or the flowers die, you cut off them. But the leaves never were dying. So I just quit watering it.
Mm-hmm.
And they still never died for about 2 months.
Right.
And finally I pulled out the bulb, and it's shrunk in size of about two-thirds.
Mm-hmm. That's not a good sign. Normally you basically force them to go dormant in the fall of the year because they have to be exposed to cool temperatures around 50 to 55 degrees for about 8 to 10 weeks. And normally what you do is you force them to go into dormancy, and you do that by bringing them inside usually in late summer, putting them in a cool kind of dry place, maybe placing the pot on its side and not watering. So when you have those dry conditions, the cool temperatures, eventually it does force the bulb to go dormant and the leaves turn brown. At that point, you can cut them off. And then you need to keep those bulbs in a cool place for like 8 to 10 weeks. And then once that has gone through, then you can start to water again, move it to a warm place. But those cool temperatures actually are needed for flower initiation. That flower bud will not form unless that bulb is exposed to those cool temperatures.
Well, all that I know, but in this case, mine has never been outside.
Okay.
I have it on the grow stand with
okay.
the grow lights. And like I said, in the fall, I don't know whether it was October or September, that the leaves never seemed to start to dry up like they previously they had.
Okay.
And then I quit watering it. But all this time I just quit watering it, tried to get it to do it, and then they never got that. And I got wondering if they weren't stealing the water from the
well, the leaves are
bulb. So I took the bulb out the other day, and it is reduced in size about 2/3.
Okay. Right. That's not a good thing. What I would probably suggest at this point is just keeping it dormant for maybe a few weeks. And then maybe, let's say, around mid-January to pot it up again using potting soil and water it and see what happens. Hopefully, it will send up foliage. But I don't think you're going to see any flowers this winter. But if it does send up foliage, then keep the plant well watered through the winter in a sunny window, and then bring it outside in the spring, typically around mid-May or so, and harden it off for a few days, and then set the pot in the ground in a sunny location, keep it well watered, maybe fertilize a few times. And then hopefully what you're going to end up with is a much more vigorous bulb, a nice big fat bulb, and maybe it'll bloom next winter.
All right. Good luck with that, Ray, or maybe also put a new one on your Christmas list this year.
You could also do that.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call. You can call with your questions at 866-780-9100 or your suggestions for great gifts for gardeners. We'll do another question before we get back to gift ideas. Here's Tom in the Clear Lake area. Hi, Tom. Tom, are you there? Well, Tom doesn't seem to be there, but I can ask you his question. Hopefully he's listening. He would like to know if it's okay to prune oak trees. And with this unusually warm weather, I can see why he might be concerned.
Right. We normally say to prune them in December, January, and February, because at that point, the insect that might transmit oak wilt is not present. And I would say at this point, it's not. So I don't see a problem doing that anytime in the next few weeks. Because even though we've had some warm weather, we have some cold nights, you don't really see any insects out and about. So I think they should be fine.
All right. And so probably should have done it last weekend when it was warmer, but
I think it's supposed to warm up again.
All right.
So
yeah.
So maybe not tomorrow. All right. Let's get back to some suggestions for great gift ideas for gardeners. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. And Jonathan is on the line. Hi, Jonathan.
Good morning. I have two items, one of which is most appropriate today. My very favorite is the little handheld dandelion and weed puller that kind of has like a forked tongue of a snake at the end of it. I actually have two of them. It works the best out of anything I've ever had for weeds. And also, the second one is the best for cleaning the barbecue grill I've ever had.
Perfect.
I have one of those, but I never thought about the barbecue, so.
Yeah.
Absolutely, absolutely. And the reason it came to mind immediately was yesterday afternoon, in full bloom out in the grass, was my first dandelion of winter.
And is it still there?
My second.
Did you dig it up?
I haven't checked it yet, but it's a no. At 21 degrees, I don't think it's going to survive too well. And also, my second and one of my favorite tools, which does not get used very often, along about 40 years ago, I bought a 17-foot extension pruning pole. And That has been tremendously helpful, not used very often, but when pruning trees up in the branches that are higher, why it works as a great tool to work with.
Right. Better than trying to climb up a ladder and killing yourself. This is the way to do it. Yes.
And it's much faster, too.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
But thank you. Thank you very much. Those are my two for the moment out of about 50 I could choose.
All right. Well, Jonathan, thank you so much for the recommendations. You can share your recommendations. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Tweet us at IPR Talks and email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. We've got a couple of gift suggestions that are not tools. This one's from Art. She says, wind chimes are one of my favorite yard gifts. I like to think of the friends who give them to me and the times we've had together when I hear them ring. And someone else said, I received a gazing ball as a gift. It reminds me of the friend that gave it to me and of my grandparents' yard. So those are lovely ideas. Let's go back to the phone. And Maxine is on the line in Coralville. Hi, Maxine.
Hi there.
Hi. What's your suggestion?
I have a gift suggestion that I found when I went looking online for a gift for a stepdaughter. They wanted a garden trowel, so I put it in on Amazon, and what popped up was a very sturdy garden trowel made in Wilcox, Iowa. And I don't remember the manufacturer's name, but I ordered two of them, and it was a great-looking trowel. It was really heavy-duty, nice handle, little leather strap on it. So if somebody's still looking for something that they want to order online, that one's a good one. It's about $20.
All right. Thanks a lot for the suggestion, Maxine.
Sure.
And you can join the conversation next, 866-780-9100. Aaron, did I hear you trying to jump
in there? All this talk about garden trowels and dandelion diggers reminded me of another tool that I think some folks really would make a great gift, because a lot of folks aren't exposed to them. And once they are, they love them. And it's a hori-hori knife. So this is like a cross between a trowel and a knife. And so it's a big, broad kind of knife. It's not super sharp, but it's sharp enough to kind of cut through soil really nicely. And you can use it as a trowel, too, especially for annuals and things like that. And the people who get these things learn to love them.
Okay. And spell it for me, can you?
H-O-R-I.
All right.
H-O-R-I. Hori Hori.
All right. So, hori-hori knife. And chances are pretty good they don't already have one.
Yeah. It's not a tool that's in a lot of people's sheds, but when they do get them, they usually enjoy them quite a bit. And so that's, I think, what makes it such a fun Christmas gift.
Right. All mm-hmm. right. Let's get back to a couple of questions. Linda is on the line next in Marion. Hi, Linda.
Hi.
Hi. What's your question?
Well, I have a trumpet vine in the corner of my backyard. It's about 12 to 15 years old. And I don't know the real name for it, but it has those big orange flowers mm-hmm. that hummingbirds like.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's way, way overgrown.
Mm-hmm.
How far can I prune it back, and when should I prune it back?
You can prune it back as far as you want, because that is a very resilient plant.
You can be ruthless.
Yes, you can be. Mm-hmm. You should be, actually.
It's about 12 feet tall, and it grows all over the neighbor's. It's back against the fence, and it's just wild.
Yeah, that's a very resilient plant. So I would probably do that sometime in March or early April.
Okay.
And you can be as ruthless as you need to be.
Very good. We'll do that.
All right, Linda. Thanks a lot for your call.
Thank you.
Yep. Let's go next to Kurt in Williamsburg. Hi, Kurt.
Hello there.
Hi. What's your question?
Well, I have my lawn, when I walk across it, there's little divots, I guess, or little hills, I guess I want to call it. That's rough on when you walk across it. And I wondered whether it's some sort of an animal. I mean, it's they're just all over the lawn when you walk across it.
Okay.
And I just wondered if they had any suggestions if it's a bug or a worm or what it is.
So it's more like a raised ridge or something, a raised mound?
It looks like it would be like a lot of little mountains that you're walking across
okay.
when you walk across the lawn.
Then I would tend
to walk across.
Right. Then I would tend to think it would be like a night crawler.
Okay.
That creates those little mounds. Mm-hmm. If it were an insect, you might see a hole, but you wouldn't typically see a mound.
Okay.
So I'm guessing might be night crawlers.
What do you do for that, or is there anything?
Well, there's not much you can do. One thing you might possibly do would be, let's say, in spring of next year, you could go out with a core aerator, which pulls out plugs of soil, and you can run that over the yard maybe two or three times, and then drag something across the surface, basically like a piece of chain link fence or something of that type, a drag mat. And what that would do is it would hopefully kind of break down the mounds that you see, but also break up the soil cores. And so that would kind of distribute some of the soil, maybe hopefully make it nice and level.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I wouldn't roll it, though. There's a lot of folks. There's a lot of folks who might recommend rolling the lawn. You know, getting a big heavy thing and rolling over, but that causes a lot of compaction, which is not going to be good for the plants. So, you may hear somebody advise you to roll it, and I wouldn't recommend that.
Okay, that's what I wondered. Okay, thank you.
All right, Kurt. Thanks a lot for your call. You can join the conversation 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. We are collecting your suggestions for great gifts for gardeners this hour. We're also answering your questions about the plants in your life. With me, Aaron Stile, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens, and Richard Giron of Iowa State University Extension Horticulture. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and we are here to answer your questions with horticulturist Richard Giron of Iowa State University Extension and Aaron Stile, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens. We're also collecting your suggestions for great gifts for gardeners this season. The number to call, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And next up, Ellen is on the line in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Ellen.
Good morning.
Hi, what's your suggestion?
My suggestion is a Cape Cod weeder. It has a sturdy wooden handle and sort of a hook on the end of it, and it is just great for getting any kind of weed out of the garden.
All right. And was this a find of your own, or did someone give you one?
Someone gave me one, and in fact, I've lost it in the compost, and I had to go get myself a new one.
Well, paint the handle red so you can find it easier.
There you go. That's what someone else has told me, and I haven't done it yet, but I will do that.
Okay. All right, and you have a question, too?
Yes, I do. I have September red raspberries that grew so tall in the fall that I had to get a ladder to pick them, and I want to know when I can prune them, knowing that they have a spring crop and a fall crop.
Okay. Well, I would prune those in late March, early April. And
okay.
you have two options. You can prune them back to the ground completely.
Okay.
And you'll get just one crop in late summer, early fall. But
right.
that one crop will be a little bit earlier than it would be if you had two. So that's one option. Other option would be to go out there and just prune out any dead wood, because there will be some winter kill, and prune that out. And also any small, real spindly canes, because they won't produce much anyway. Leave the big, fatter canes. And then they'll produce a crop in early summer, and then the new canes will produce a crop in late summer, early fall. So either way.
Okay, so if I don't take them all the way down to the ground, how tall can I leave them? I know you said take out the dead stuff and the spindly ones, but the healthy ones I'm going to let be really tall again?
Well, let's say we have a mild winter
and
we don't have much winter kill. Then I would remove the upper 25% of the cane.
All right.
And I would do that because as far as that cane is concerned, about 50% of it, well, the majority of the crop is produced in the middle 50% of the cane. And very little fruit is produced on the upper 25%, very few fruit on the bottom 25%. So you can remove the top 25%.
Okay, and that would be March or April as well.
Right.
Okay, thank you so much.
All right, thanks a lot for your call, Ellen. And next up, we've got Beth near Cedar Falls. Hi, Beth.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What would you like to talk about?
Well, I have 5 horses, and so I have been composting their manure because, well, horses have a lot of manure, and I used it last year for my vegetable and flower gardens, and, you know, I would turn it with my tractor every other day, so it turned into mulch pretty quickly, but I'm wondering if there's anything else I need to do for my vegetables or flower gardens that would any additives that I need to put. Do I need soil, or can I use this mulch manure? What are your suggestions?
I don't know that you need to do much more to it. I mean, it's good that you're composting it. That helps kind of, I think, buffer it out a little bit, and also if you allow it to get hot enough, and if it does get hot enough, it'll kill weed seeds and other things like that. You could add, I mean, you could incorporate some green material into it throughout the summer. That would also help get it hotter, and therefore would help kind of with some of that, you know, killing of weed seeds and some of those other things, because green material it can be nice. So like if you incorporate some grass clippings in it every once in a while or something like that, that could help create some nice, healthy compost. But it sounds like you're on the right track of doing something that will hopefully work well for you.
Oh, that's awesome to hear. Mm-hmm. My mom keeps suggesting that I need to go out and buy more soil to put in with the manure. But when I compost it, it no longer smells like manure. It
yeah.
smells fresh and dirt-like.
Yeah, and that's a great sign. That's a great sign. So whatever you're doing seems to be working well.
Okay. Well, good. Well, thank you for your time. I appreciate it.
All right, Beth, it sounds like you have enough. Maybe you can give manure as gifts this holiday season.
I would love to. I have a huge pile. You guys can come and get some.
Are you asking charity?
No.
Talking about it. I will come and leave it on your driveway.
Right. Oh, Beth, thanks a lot for your call.
Yes, thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. Next up, Greg is on the line in Boone. Hi, Greg.
How we doing?
Good. What's your question?
Hey, I've got one rose plant that I divided up into 5, and I've kind of played with them. They're like 9 or 10 feet tall. I've staked them up. But I'm looking, my wife doesn't like them, so I was going to transplant them. And I was wondering if it's okay to do it now, or if I need to wait till spring like you do in the pruning, or...
Right. If I was going to transplant those, I would do that when they're still dormant, but in early spring. So as soon as the ground is workable, I dig them up and move them.
Okay. And then I had a question for Creepin' Charlie. What's the best? There's a bunch out there that...
Okay.
...something to control. But...
Well, there are broadleaf herbicides. So if this is in the lawn, I would apply a broadleaf herbicide, and any product that contains 2,4-D or triclopyr, which is triclopyr, can apply that in the fall. Those are very, very common broadleaf herbicide compounds, so it shouldn't be hard to find one product. And you need to apply the product twice in the fall, about a month apart. So the first one typically goes on around late September, early October, and the second one a month later.
It's too late to do it now, then?
Yeah, it would be too late for that, right, yeah. At this point, I think the weeds are kind of semi-dormant, so they really wouldn't absorb the herbicide very readily at this point.
Okay.
All right, Greg, thanks a lot for your call. Yep. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. We still have time for a couple of more calls this hour. We've had a few more suggestions coming in. Jana in Iowa City said that garden bandit weeders seem to be some of the best gifts. And here's a suggestion from Christy. She says, this isn't the most glamorous gift, but the HERS shovel has saved my back and my hands a lot of strain. They're made for female gardeners or anyone with less upper body strength. I wish I'd bought it earlier. I also love my Wolf Garten trowel. You know, I hate the idea that women are the only people in the world that appreciate good leverage, but, but it sounds like a great shovel. I think we could all save a little body strength if we focus on the just using the legs with the shovel. All right. Here's a question from Don in Davenport. We have a young tree, a winter king hawthorn. The trunk is about 2 to 3 inches in diameter, and it's been in our ground for 4 years. This year, we've just noticed that all the bark appears to be peeling off. Is this a normal growth thing, or is our tree in trouble?
Well, it's hard to say at this point. Sometimes you'll see the outer layers of bark kind of peel off, but you still have bark beneath it, and that's okay, and that may be occurring. But if it's a, if all the bark is coming off down to the wood, that is a serious problem. And if it is, it's going to be very smooth and typically whitish in color if that's occurring. There's not much you can do about it, but that is much more serious than just some outer layers coming off.
Okay, so they need to look into this a little further?
Right.
Yeah.
Do some investigating. Okay, and maybe call back next time we have Hort Day. Sandy has this question. She says, it appears I have a fungus problem in my yard, fairy rings, and areas where the sod is dying. When is the best time to apply fungal remedies, and what is out there?
Well, a fairy ring is a pretty unique thing. Basically, you have these mushrooms come up in a ring, and inside the ring, there's nothing. You just have these mushrooms in a ring, and they're quite unique, quite interesting. But as far as removing them or stopping them, an application of fungicides will not do it. They just will not prevent them from coming up. Now, over time, that ring typically gets bigger and bigger, and over the years, it may get to be like 25, 30 feet in diameter. There's really no good way to destroy them unless you're willing to dig up the soil in that ring to a depth of maybe a foot and remove all that soil and put back fresh, which I don't think is very practical in most cases. So you kind of enjoy them because they are kind of unusual.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and keep in mind that this fungal material is doing good things for us. I mean, they're breaking down wood and organic matter that helps create the great soil that we have in our lawn. So promoting the idea of getting rid of this type of fungus is kind of hard for either of us to do, honestly.
So often,
and it's also really hard to get rid of.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah,
so,
and it's hard to do anyway.
Right, so if you turn it around and embrace it, maybe that's
right.
Better all around. Huh?
Oftentimes, the grass in that ring is usually a darker green because the fungus is breaking down the organic matter, releasing nutrients. And so you have this dark green ring compared to the neighboring grass, and you have the mushrooms. Now, you can hide that ring by fertilizing the entire yard, so the entire yard is a nice dark green, but you'll still have the mushrooms coming up.
All right. And if you consistently mow them off, that kind of thing.
You pick them. Yeah.
Yeah. And they'll still get their work done?
Yep.
Okay. Because I know some people are concerned about their pets or
right,
their children.
Right. You just kind of pick them and discard them.
All right. This one is a garden gift suggestion from Kathy. She says, for the person who already has one of each of the excellent tools suggested, I recommend a file to keep them sharp.
Yeah, that's a good one.
And, of course, we still have time for a couple more suggestions this hour, 866-780-9100. Here is a question from Ron in Iowa City. Hi, Ron.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
My question is, we just moved to Iowa City, not this past fall, but the year before, and we've got an apple tree that has multiple types of apples on it. Problem is, almost all of them come up with spots and brown, like wormholes through them. I've been told I should spray them, but I'm with the old Joni Mitchell thing, give me spots on my apples, but leave me the birds and the bees. So we've got nothing, and consequently, we've done nothing, and consequently, most of our apples are going to waste. What's mm-hmm. the solution?
Well, there's no easy answer. One answer would be to spray it with a pesticide, because you do have things like apple maggot, plum curculio, coddling moth, they're out there, they're very common. The other option might be to use some traps, which you can buy at a garden center. For example, a red sticky ball trap that you hang in the tree and you coat with a very sticky material. And that basically will catch certain of the insects that might damage the apples. And so if you use a sticky trap, they're not as effective as the pesticides, but they should reduce the damage. So the damage might be to the point where they're still edible at that point. So.
Okay. Yeah, because most of them, like you say, you cut them open and there's brown worms and stuff all through them.
Right. Right. So apples are a high-maintenance crop because you have so many insect pests that will damage them. It becomes very, very difficult.
Yeah, they also, when they fall to the ground, they seem to attract raccoons. We've had a bunch of those running around.
Now, if they fall to the ground, you do want to basically remove them and dispose of them because they do have some of the insects in them, and you want to get rid of those fallen fruit.
All right. It just makes the problem worse next year.
Right.
All right, Ron, thank you so much for your call. And since Ron brought up being kind to insects, I have some lovely gift suggestions for the holiday season from entomologist Donald Lewis. He says, my holiday gift wish is for a milkweed in every garden and a monarch on every flower. My second wish is for a mild winter and plentiful spring nectar for the honeybees. He says his holiday book wish is for a copy of Garden Plants for Honeybees by Peter Lintner. It's a plant book for entomologists. And he also says anything by the late great American insect and wildlife artist Charlie Harper is wonderful. He specialized in minimal realism, coffee table books, calendars. It's all good. So some great suggestions from Donald Lewis there. We also have a suggestion from Linda Nave, a tool that I had never seen before. She sent along a picture with it. So now I know what it looks like, but I may have a hard time describing it. A broad fork. So it's kind of like a pitchfork,
yes,
but it's wider with shorter tines and for loosening up the soil.
Right.
Yeah. It kind of looks like two pitchforks put together. It even has two handles. For leverage, and you push down on it with your foot. And apparently it's so easy to use, you can even do it with flip-flops on. Because that's what's in the picture here, although I would not recommend that under any circumstance.
Right. And Linda said no. Wear real shoes. All right. Here's a question for you, Aaron, from William. Visiting Ryman Gardens last summer, the wisteria was in bloom and beautiful. I wondered what variety it is and if there are any special tips for growing it in Iowa. Also, I'm going to try a golden rain tree this next spring and wondered what you thought about that.
Well, starting with the golden rain tree, we have a few at Ryman Gardens. They're a little marginal, so you want to make sure you put them in a protected location, not out in the middle of a wide open field, for example. But we've had them, and they're a fun tree, not one you see often in Iowa because they are a little marginally hardy here. The wisteria is a cultivar called Ant D, and I believe it's a type of Kentucky wisteria, which is a native, unlike the ones that you often see in the nurseries, which are either Japanese or Chinese, both of which aren't as hardy, winter hardy, as the Kentucky wisteria. It is a very vigorous vine. Once you get it established, you will have no problem growing it. And if you see it at Ryman Gardens, you will see that in action. We have no problem growing this vine on the pergola that it's on.
Now, so, often when people say it that way, it means that they have a little bit of a problem controlling it.
You know, and it does set seed a little bit. So we find it coming up here and there every once in a while. It's not rampant. It's not as bad as trumpet vine, for example, but it does do that a little bit. But otherwise, a good hardy pruning every handful of years goes a long way.
All right. Aaron Stile, thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Aaron Stile, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens. Richard Giron, thank you.
You're welcome.
Richard Giron, horticulturist with Iowa State University Extension. And happy holidays to both of you.
Yeah. You too.
We will be back with Horticulture Day early in January. And I have just a moment to say goodbye and thank you to our intern here at Iowa Public Radio, Patrick Lenan. Thank you so much for all your work, Patrick, and best of luck to you. And happy holidays to everyone. This is Talk of Iowa.